associated with learning from the mistakes of other people. And I have fortunately been in a rather unique position to have done this process a couple hundred times. And it's really interesting. Every business is unique, but there's so much a thread of similarity across the board with the challenges that all small to medium businesses tend to face. And this isn't actually going to surprise you, probably, but there are actually some really large organizations. I can tell you right now, I know of a hospital conglomerate up in Sheboygan that doesn't have any network segmentation going on. And that is pretty catastrophic because I was doing network segmentation as far back as 1995. So if they've got a team of seven or so network engineers, how is it that a hospital with the resources of a hospital with seven full-time networking staff has got, I would characterize, a non-HIPAA compliant network? I don't think you can have a HIPAA compliant network if you don't have network segmentation, let alone micro segmentation going on. And by the way, that's a whole new verbiage that's cropped up for a commonly used tactic that true quality network engineers have been using since the beginning of time, it seems. This whole verbiage of micro segmentation is something that all of the quality network engineers that I've ever met, they've always used that technique. But we've never called it micro segmentation. We just call it good network design, secure network design. To us, it's the obvious and thing to do and the only viable option out there. So I like to talk about these real world examples. We can learn so much from them. So I'm going to tell you about a business that I've recently engaged with. So that we can learn a lot from this specific example, because it really has the rhyme and the trend and the pattern of most other scenarios that I've encountered in the past. And I do want to predefine for you what I refer to as small and medium business. Medium business is actually as big as a $200 million a year company. Yeah. It doesn't take that many people to get to $200 million a year in revenue. So you'd be really surprised. You just don't have to have that many people in order to get to that kind of revenue. Now, I'm not talking about profit level here. I'm talking about total sales revenue. So that is usually a thresholded cutoff for what's deemed to be a medium-sized business. And of course, there's another level in there where you go from small to medium. And I'm not going to draw any delineation there for you on that. But I think it's important for you to realize that we're not talking about tiny orgs here. We're not talking about little, five employee organizations. I'm talking about organizations that, boy, I've seen organizations that have 150 employees that have exactly these same problems that I'm going to tell you about. So the reason that I think that's really important for you to understand is that there is not a direct relationship between the size of the organization and how competently it's being managed. I mean, of course, we see this as direct evidence in the real world on a regular basis. I mean, Equifax, massive, massive corporation with absolutely no shortage of resources, no shortage of opportunities to take care of mitigating risk and safeguarding the data that they have. Yet, they have failed over and over and over and over and over again to protect that data. That was not the first time that Equifax had been breached. And then we look at Target, Home Depot, TJ Maxx. The list goes on and on. you know, of course, the Office of Management Budget, you know, the OMB, right? The federal government gets hacked. So clearly there is no direct relationship between the size of the organization and whether or not they got their stuff together with regards to technology security. Now, part of security is, of course, having good backups. Security is, do we have business continuity? Do we have resiliency in order to adapt to, adjust, and survive issues, outages, concerns, attacks, all kinds of different things? Are we resilient in our business practices? Do we have the right people allocated to the right processes to make sure we have a level of failover and redundancy? You know, this goes way far beyond technology. I was just having a conversation a couple days ago with a CEO of an organization who, you know, was asking me about, well, what if their outsourced provider who's handling a particular service for them decides to just reset the passwords for all the admin accounts one night and walk away? What recourse do they have in order to recover from that type of a malicious event? And that is a question that everyone should be asking. Of course, I would make an even bigger argument that if you have any concerns about that individual that does have admin access to your systems, then that person needs to go. They need to be migrated out of that position of privileged access, because you can't be having doubts about people. And whether your doubts are legitimate or not, I'm not even going to get into that debate. But if you have doubts where you don't feel that you can trust that person, then you need to do something about it. Now, maybe that means you get an audit by an external party to verify things, to really help you have an objective assessment as to the status of things. Is that person doing their job effectively? Are they abusing their power? These sorts of things. Because I can tell you, all the audits that I've done, it's very, very clear who's been abusing their power, you know, and who's doing their job and who's not doing their job. And, you know, finding problems is not necessarily an indicator of somebody being incompetent. It could just be an indicator that executive management doesn't give them the time or the resources to actually take care of the important problems. I mean, if you have staff who are just getting hammered by end user support tickets all the time, I guarantee you the squeaky wheel is going to get the attention, not the infrastructure. So security gaps continue to exist and grow in the infrastructure unless there is a dedicated, ongoing, continuous improvement, you know, kind of a lean manufacturing methodology of this cycle of find the problem, fix the problem, reassess the situation, determine if that problem still exists, or, you know, and if it needs more fixing, and move on to the next problem, right? But I've been doing this for more than 20 years, and I can tell you there is always something else in a technology infrastructure or a business process with regards to technology and security that needs attention. There is always something that needs attention. And if you don't have somebody whose job it is to always be making the infrastructure and the security and the maintenance of the existing investment that you've made into security sustainable and better, then whatever money you've spent is just, you might as well have lit it on fire, because nobody's maintaining it. Nobody's ensuring that it continues to be as good as it was when it was implemented. The bad guys are constantly coming up with new ways to get at you and to get your stuff and compromise your systems and break things. And you don't even need to ask the question why. I mean, this is obvious in terms of they want your data, they want your customer list, they want your intellectual property, they want your financials, they want access to your bank accounts. They want to know where where you live so they can harass you and intimidate you, bribe you. I mean, I'm sure you've all heard of the hacks of certain websites that contained interesting information that people would have rather not had made publicly available, well, that's very good for bribing people, right? Extortion. So the bad guys don't pay taxes. They don't pay income taxes. They don't pay FICA taxes. They are motivated by all kinds of illicit income through illicit means, and they don't pay any taxes. So that's why they do it. That's the only thing you need to know, is because they choose to be criminals. I mean, that's really the delineation. It's not about why. It's because it's profitable and because it's fun. They get an exhilaration from it. I mean, are serial murderers profitable? Are they doing it because it's profitable? No, it's because they want to, because they like to. Well, a lot of criminal activity is they're going to do it because they want to. So this isn't about whether or not you're, why would they come after me? Because they can. If you look like a soft target, they will come. If you harden your systems, they will probably try to get you, find that you're not a soft target, and then go, there's better people to pick on. There's better people to exploit. So we'll move on to, more easy ground. So I'm going to talk to you now about this real world example. I went to this organization and find that they have had some IT support in the past, not what I would characterize as people who were qualified. I would characterize the former IT support as dabblers, people who dabble in IT consulting. And you should realize there is probably 80% of the people in the industry, in the IT consulting industry, and I'm not talking about large commercial enterprise. I'm not talking about employees of Fortune 500 companies, okay? I'm talking about IT consulting firms that are available to provide consulting services to small and medium business. I would argue that 80% of the people in that industry are dabblers. They do not have adequate skill, certifications, ethics in a lot of cases. They don't have technical depth of knowledge in the products, and they certainly don't have the experience that you need in order to get the job done. So it's hard. It's hard to find good people. It's probably as similar as finding a really good CPA for your business or finding a really good attorney for your business. It's the same thing. It's hard to find talented IT people. And just like if you shop for a CPA based on the CPA's hourly rate, well, usually, not always, but usually you're going to get what you pay for. Same thing with the attorney. You don't have to have the most expensive attorney, but if you're going with an attorney based upon price, you're probably not getting an attorney that is efficient and will end up costing you more money in the long run. So the same concept actually applies in the IT consulting industry. As I said, it's hard to find qualified people. Do not fall into the trap of sizing up the capabilities of a company based upon how many employees it has. I continue to run into situations where I see consulting firms that have 7 engineers on staff, but yet if I add up those 7 engineers, they don't have the certifications or experience that I do. So it's really all about who is available to provide your organization service. It's not about the quantity of people. So if it's really just one or two people at that company that have the skills to deliver service to your business, that's better than 7 people that individually, don't have the skills to deliver service to your business, right? So be very cognizant of that. I mean, when you go to find a law firm, you're not exactly looking for 5 attorneys that can service you simultaneously. You're looking for that relationship with the one attorney. And then you rely upon that attorney in order to bring in their staff to do various things. But ultimately, it's the services of that attorney that is what you're buying, right? It's that relationship. So you need to understand IT consulting at the truly professional level, not just the outsourced, throw it to India sort of model. Truly professional quality security consulting is very much like having a relationship with your CPA or your attorney. And there's absolutely a model out there that's just, hey, let's give 400 people admin access to all your systems and it's going to get outsourced to India. I do not subscribe to that model because I know of Fortune 500 companies that have 8 top engineers that are the only ones that have God-level admin access. And they're servicing, you know, 13,000 employees. So if they only need 8 God-level access individuals in order to provide adequate admin-level service to an organization of 13,000 employees, then why is it that your small to medium business needs 400 people to have God-level access to your systems? Yeah, that's a question you need to ask. All right, so I go in there and I find, you know, no patching, no server maintenance. Backups are definitely not working if they were ever even set up. And I really couldn't find any indication that they were ever set up correctly or at all. In fact, the majority of the data wasn't even being stored on the server. It was being stored on a little network appliance, which also was not being backed up. No viable endpoint security product. The endpoint security product, even though it was trash, it was even expired, right? So it was a double whammy of nobody could have even expected it to have any level of effectiveness because it was expired and throwing warnings. And of course, I'm saying to myself, well, if it's expired and throwing warnings and you don't want to renew it, then why not just uninstall it from your computer because it's pointless to have it there. It's expired and it's doing nothing. Really old version of Java is like Java 6. I believe the current current version of Java is like Java 8 build 151. So if you're running Java version 6, that's probably a version of Java from 4 or 5 years ago. That's pretty way enormously vulnerable. I mean, have we forgotten the incident where Yahoo in their website was hacked by malvertisements and it was serving up like 250,000 malvertisements exploiting a Java vulnerability, you know, on an hourly basis? Now, had people had their computers for Java patched, they would not have been hacked. So this is one of those things where you look at it, boy, gee, it's just so simple in many ways. It's just so simple to keep yourself from being hacked. But in other aspects, it's super hard. So I, again, going back to this example, no security appliance at all. Just a consumer grade router you'd get from Best Buy or something like that. PCs obtained from Best Buy, never set up in any sort of a standard way. You know, no security on them, no policy. Windows firewall was not enabled. No logging and reporting for any sort of a security product. So when you don't log and report with regards to security incidences, whether we're talking about network traffic, perimeter firewall traffic, things like the endpoint security product, and you have no visibility into event logs because there was no policy that actually turned on any audit logging. You know, if you never turn on logging, you don't have any logs to look at. And logs are not on by default. Not all. There's seems to be a shortage of endpoint protection agents that even have logging as a capability, but yet PCI, HIPAA, and all kinds of other regulatory compliance requirements state that an endpoint protection agent must have logging and reporting capabilities. Because, of course, if it doesn't, how would you ever audit anything? How would you even know that a security incident was occurring? So these, in so many ways, they're simple things to fix. You know, get a proper endpoint security agent. Patch all of your systems. Build your PCs in a standard way. I saw a lot of Windows 7 systems. Why? Why in the world would you be using Windows 7 at this point? I mean, for longtime listeners of the show, you will remember how many times I've talked about how I've seen Windows 7 hacked right in front of my eyes just by browsing the internet or by malicious web wireless traffic, like a rogue device on the wireless network, was then side hacking other devices. I've seen Windows 8 get hacked in front of my eyes. So anybody who's not using Windows 10 at this point, I think you seriously need to reevaluate what you're doing. You're putting everything that you have at risk simply by using an antiquated, known to be insecure operating system. And there's an element of this where it's no longer as simple as just install the Windows updates. You can't say, oh, well, I've installed all the Windows updates. No. It's just not that simple. There's the SMB1 CIFS vulnerability. Now, by default, anytime you install a Windows operating system, that's going to be on there. So there's, sure, you can install a patch, but do you want ransomware? Well, if not, if you don't want something like the Petya ransomware, you have to manually go in and remove the SMB1 CIFS component. Now, if you don't have a security engineer who's helping you come up with these standards, and if you don't have a process that says, hey, when we get a PC in our business, this is the process we're going to utilize in order to set it up, then you're leaving all those things wide open. And what about then that monthly maintenance? How are the Microsoft updates getting installed? How's the new version of Java getting installed? What about the new version of Flash? What about the new version of Firefox? I've seen even just stupid mistakes recently where end users not knowing any better, but then end up causing themselves a whole lot of trouble where they'll download a 64-bit driver and a 64-bit Java and then end up finding, well, that 64-bit Java doesn't plug into the other 32-bit browsers that they have. And it all just ends up in a jumble pile, and ultimately the functionality that they're looking for is broken and it doesn't work. And I had this conversation with someone recently where I said, you know, I just don't run into these problems. And I mean, that was really the first times that I've run into that problem in a really, really, really long time, because almost exclusively I'm dealing with systems that have been built properly, maintained properly, and they're fully patched and they're not diddled with. And what I mean by they're not diddled with is the only individuals that are making systemic changes like application and patch changes and so forth to these endpoints are trained, qualified individuals, whether that be the trained in-house part-time IT person, that could be totally fine, or, you know, an external engineer. Or it could just be the external engineers managing policy on the server, which pushes out updates to the PCs, right? There's a variety of different approaches, but ultimately somebody has to be patching these systems, right? So I always see where the network, I mean, literally I've never walked into a place and said, you know what? Your network has been architected well. No, it's a disaster. There is usually no architecting. It's just some sort of flat network, a behemoth of a mishmash of everything all mixed together, no segmentation at all, certainly no micro segmentation, you know, and people can't even begin to know what's going on with the network at that level. They can't see any traffic, they can't control any traffic, so they can't secure anything. And unless it's a security appliance, then they're definitely not securing anything inbound or outbound. I've also seen where, in a lot of cases, where people are experiencing performance issues because they're using an undersized, inappropriately programmed perimeter appliance. And I've actually run into that a lot. People seem to buy perimeter appliances based upon a price point, which is ridiculous. That is not how you make a decision with regards to which perimeter appliance to buy. That decision has to be done based upon, all right, this is the outcome we want this device to deliver. Therefore, it needs to have this level of functionality, which then backs into how much horsepower it has. Horsepower and capabilities. That is what drives which model, which device is going to be appropriate for you. And if you can't afford that, then you are going to have to accept that you will be creating holes in your security plan that may end up causing your organization to be breached. So the question you then have to ask yourself is that incremental $600 or $800 over a 3-year time period, mind you, is that incremental price cheaper than giving up control over the cost profile of security? And almost 100% of time, that is the answer. It is way more cost effective for you to take control over the cost profile of security by saying, I'm just going to pay the money for this appliance. I'm going to have it implemented properly. And then I've got a plan to keep it maintained and well managed. As opposed to, no, I'm going to not have this level of security. So I'm going to leave myself vulnerable to the bad guys. And then I don't know when the bad guys will attack me or what the scope of the damage is going to be. And when you don't have control over the timing or the scope of the problem, you also lose control over the cost profile of that problem. And I guarantee you it will be at some point in time when it's inconvenient. Every business owner that I know is busy. They have an endless quantity of work. Boy, I have, I can tell you that people are working harder than they've ever worked before. I don't see people having the nice, luxurious lives that they used to have back in the early 90s. People are just working themselves to the bone these days. Whether you're, it just doesn't seem to matter what kind of business owner I'm talking to. People are just working. So they don't have time to absorb problems that they don't have the ability to control the scope of. So I just so firmly believe that it's so much better for you and your business to take control over that cost profile of security rather than having the bad guys do it. But so there's all these things that are really so easy to fix. And it's so consistent. Every organization I ever run into has the same problems and they need to do the same things. And I've even some years afterwards working with an organization, they might want a penetration test. And I say to them, well, that's fine. You can go do your penetration test. You know, we can get that done for you. But what are you hoping for as an outcome? Are you looking for an action plan to fix the security gaps? Because you already know what the security gaps are that you still have. And until you've spent the time closing those security gaps, then is it really a good use of your money to go try to find security gaps that you don't know exist? Right? Because if you go pay for a penetration test, it's probably going to reveal the security gaps that you already knew you had. Sometimes organizations have to do that for a compliance purpose so that they can prove that they've had an assessment and that they can, you know, that they've taken some action on it. But really, in the grand scheme of things, I found that to also be what I would characterize as security theater by and large. Usually it takes to get to a pretty darn big organization where they've actually fully actioned all the security gaps that they know they have and then have a penetration test. Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you found it instructive and helpful in managing your business.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all, with those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happy